Welcome to the OCR GCSE Sociology Revision Podcast. I'm your tutor today, and we're diving into one of the most fascinating and exam-critical topics on the specification, theories of crime and deviance. Whether you're revising for the first time or doing a final check before your exam, this episode is going to walk you through everything you need to know, the key theories, the key thinkers, the exam technique, and some quick-fire questions at the end to test yourself. So let's get started. First, let's get our heads around a really important distinction that examiners love to test. What is the difference between crime and deviance? Crime is a legal violation. It's an act that breaks the law and can result in formal punishment by the state. Deviance, on the other hand, is a much broader concept. It refers to any behavior that breaks the norms and values of a society, whether or not it's illegal. So, for example, murder is both a crime and deviant. But burping loudly in a restaurant? That's deviant. It breaks social norms, but it's not a crime. And here's where it gets really interesting. Some acts are crimes, but not considered deviant by many people. Speeding on a motorway, for instance. Loads of people do it, so it doesn't feel deviant even though it breaks the law. Examiners will credit you for making this distinction clearly and early in your answers. Now, let's move into the three big theoretical perspectives. Think of them as three different lenses through which sociologists look at crime and deviance. Each one gives a completely different explanation for why crime exists. We have functionalism, Marxism, and interactionism. Let's take each one in turn. Starting with functionalism. Functionalists take a macro, structural approach. They look at society as a whole, like a body with different parts working together. The key thinker here is Emile Durkheim, writing in the late 19th century. Durkheim made a really bold claim. He said crime is normal and even necessary in society. Why? Because crime performs functions. First, it reinforces social norms. When someone commits a crime and is punished, it reminds the rest of us what the boundaries are. It strengthens social solidarity. Second, crime can act as a safety valve, releasing social pressure. And third, and this is a brilliant point for evaluation, crime can actually be a force for positive social change. Think about the suffragettes, who broke the law to win women the right to vote. Their criminal behavior led to social progress. But Durkheim also introduced the concept of anomie, and this is a term you absolutely must use in your exam answers. Anomie means normlessness. It's a state where the norms and values of society break down, people lose their moral compass, and deviance increases. Durkheim argued this happens during periods of rapid social change, like industrialization. Now, Robert Merton built on Durkheim's idea of anomie with his strain theory developed in the 1930s in the American context. Merton argued that American society promotes universal goals, particularly wealth and success, but not everyone has equal access to the legitimate means to achieve those goals like education and well-paid jobs. This creates a strain, a tension, between the goals society sets and the means available to achieve them. Merton identified five responses to this strain. The first is conformity. You accept both the goals and the means. Most people do this. The second is innovation. You accept the goal of wealth but use illegitimate means to get there, like theft or drug dealing. This is Merton's explanation for working-class crime. The third is ritualism. You give up on the goals but keep following the rules anyway, like a burnt-out civil servant. The fourth is retreatism. You give up on both the goals and the means, like someone who turns to substance abuse. And the fifth is rebellion. You reject the existing goals and means and replace them with new ones, like a political revolutionary. For your exam, the key evaluation point against functionalism is this. It relies heavily on official crime statistics, which are problematic. Interactionists argue these statistics are socially constructed. They reflect who gets caught and labeled, not the true picture of crime. Also, functionalism struggles to explain why crime is not evenly distributed across society. Why are working class and minority ethnic groups overrepresented in the statistics? Functionalism doesn't fully answer this. Now let's move to Marxism, which gives us a very different, conflict-based explanation. Marxists argue that society is divided between two classes: the bourgeoisie, who own the means of production and hold power, and the proletariat, the working class, who are exploited. For Marxists, the entire legal system, the laws, the police, the courts, serves the interests of the ruling class. The key concept here is criminogenic capitalism. Marxists argue that capitalism itself generates crime. How? In three main ways. First, the poverty and inequality produced by capitalism drive the working class to commit crimes out of necessity or desperation. Think theft and burglary. Second, capitalism promotes a culture of greed and materialism, encouraging everyone to pursue wealth by any means. Third, the ruling class commits corporate crime, fraud, tax evasion, health and safety violations, but these crimes are rarely prosecuted with the same vigor as street crime. William Chambliss, in his 1975 study of Seattle, showed how powerful criminal networks involving politicians and business people operated freely while the police focused on street-level crime by the poor. The Marxist evaluation point that examiners love is this. Marxism struggles to explain non-utilitarian crime, crime that has no economic motive. Why do people commit vandalism or acts of violence that gain them nothing financially? Marxism doesn't have a great answer for this. Also, not all working-class people turn to crime despite experiencing poverty, which suggests other factors must be at play. Now let's talk about Albert Cohen and his concept of status frustration, which is sometimes confused with Merton's strain theory, and examiners will penalize you if you mix them up. Cohen agreed with Merton that working-class young men are blocked from achieving mainstream success. But his explanation of the response is different and crucially collective rather than individual. Cohen argued that working-class boys, when they fail in school and are denied status in mainstream society, don't just individually turn to crime. Instead, they form subcultures, groups with their own alternative value systems where they can achieve status. In these subcultures, the values are inverted. Behavior that mainstream society condemns, like vandalism or fighting, becomes a source of status and respect within the group. This is Cohen's concept of status frustration. The frustration of being denied status in mainstream society leads to the formation of delinquent subcultures. This explains gang behavior and youth crime far better than Merton's individual-focused model. Now, our third major perspective, interactionism. This is a micro approach. It focuses on small-scale interactions and how meaning is constructed in everyday life. The key thinker is Howard Becker, who developed labeling theory in his 1963 book, Outsiders. Becker's central argument is this: deviance is not a quality of the act itself. It is a label applied to an act by others. As he famously put it, deviant behavior is behavior that people so label. In other words, nothing is inherently deviant. It only becomes deviant when someone with the power to label decides it is. This leads to the concept of the master status. When a person is labeled, say, as a criminal or a troublemaker, that label becomes their master status. It overrides all their other identities. They are no longer a student, a son, a footballer. They are primarily a criminal. And this master status shapes how others interact with them, which in turn shapes how they see themselves. Edwin Lemmert developed this further with the distinction between primary and secondary deviance. Primary deviance is the initial act, perhaps a minor offense that goes unnoticed or unpunished. Secondary deviance occurs when the person internalizes the label and begins to build their identity around it. They start to act in accordance with the label. This is the self-fulfilling prophecy. The label becomes a cause of further deviance, not just a description of it. For evaluation, labeling theory is powerful because it explains how the criminal justice system can actually create more crime. But it has been criticized for ignoring the initial causes of deviance. Why did the person commit the act in the first place? It also seems to remove individual responsibility, treating offenders as passive victims of labeling rather than active agents making choices. Now, a crucial concept that links all three perspectives: the dark figure of crime. Official crime statistics, published by the Home Office, only capture crimes that are reported to the police and recorded. But a huge amount of crime goes unrecorded. This hidden crime is called the dark figure of crime. It includes crimes that victims don't report, perhaps because they feel embarrassed, fear reprisal, or don't think the police will act. It includes crimes that police don't record or choose to downgrade. The Crime Survey for England and Wales, formerly called the British Crime Survey, attempts to measure this dark figure by asking a random sample of the population about their experiences of crime, whether or not they reported it. Interactionists use the dark figure to critique functionalists and Marxists who rely on official statistics, arguing those statistics tell us more about policing priorities than about the actual distribution of crime. Right, let's move into exam tips and the most common mistakes I see candidates make. Mistake number one, confusing crime and deviance. Always define both terms at the start of any relevant answer and give an example of each. Examiners award marks for this distinction. Mistake number two, using psychological or biological explanations. This is a sociology exam. If you write criminals have mental illness or crime is genetic, you will not receive credit. You must use sociological, structural explanations. Mistake number 3, confusing Merton and Cohen. Remember, Merton is individual, Cohen is collective. Merton explains individual responses to blocked goals. Cohen explains the formation of group subcultures as a collective response to status frustration. Mistake number 4, listing theories without evaluating them. For 12-mark and 24-mark questions, you must set theories in debate with each other. Don't just describe functionalism, contrast it with Marxism or interactionism. Top band answers always involve theoretical debate. Mistake number 5, weak conclusions. For evaluate questions, your conclusion must make a definitive judgment. Don't sit on the fence. Say something like, overall, the interactionist perspective offers the most convincing explanation because it accounts for the social construction of crime statistics, though it must be combined with structural theories to explain the root causes of deviance. For timing, remember the 1 minute per mark rule. A 12-mark question gets 12 minutes. A 24-mark question gets 24 minutes. Do not overwrite on the short questions at the expense of the essays. For Peel structure in every paragraph, point, state your argument, evidence, name the sociologist and their study or concept, explanation, explain how the evidence supports your point, link, connect back to the question. Now, let's do a quick-fire recall quiz. I'll ask the question, give you a few seconds to think, then give the answer. Ready? Question 1. What term did Durkheim use to describe a state of normlessness in society? The answer is anomie. Question 2. According to Merton's strain theory, what is the term for someone who accepts the goals of society but uses illegitimate means to achieve them? The answer is innovation. Question 3. What is the term for a label that becomes a person's primary defining characteristic, overriding all others? The answer is master status. Question 4. What concept describes the hidden crime not captured in official statistics? The answer is the dark figure of crime. Question 5. Which sociologist argued that working-class boys form delinquent subcultures in response to being denied status in mainstream society? The answer is Albert Cohen, and the concept is status frustration. Question 6. What does Peel stand for in essay writing? Point, evidence, explanation, link. How did you do? If you got all 6, you're in great shape. If you missed any, go back and review those sections. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of the key points from today. 1. Crime is a legal violation. Deviance is a broader norm violation. Always distinguish between them. 2. Functionalists, particularly Durkheim and Merton, see crime as a product of structural factors, anomie and strain, and argue it can serve social functions. 3. Marxists argue capitalism is criminogenic. It generates crime through inequality, and the legal system protects ruling class interests. 4. Cohen's status frustration explains collective subcultural responses to blocked opportunities, distinct from Merton's individual-focused model. 5. Interactionists, particularly Becker, argue that deviance is socially constructed through labeling, leading to master status and the self-fulfilling prophecy. 6. The dark figure of crime reveals the limitations of official statistics and is a key evaluation tool. And 7. In your exam, always evaluate, set theories in debate, use sociological terminology, and end with a definitive conclusion. You've got this. Good luck in your exam, and remember, every paragraph is an opportunity to show the examiner exactly what you know. Make it count. See you next time.